It's episode 18 of Chefs on the Pass, the Craft Guild of Chefs official podcast. Let's go! And with competition season wrapping up, it felt only right to bring things full circle. Last month we spoke with National Chef of the Year Danny Young, and this time I'm joined by the incredible young National Chef of the Year, Ciara Carolyn. Ciara returns to the show after finishing third last year, and this time she's gone all the way to the top. We chat about what drove her to come back stronger, the lessons learned from last year's fiery barbecue incident, and how practice, perseverance, and passion paved the way to victory. It's a story of growth, grit, and a whole lot of good humour, so make sure you hit that subscribe button and come right on in. Hello and welcome to Chefs on the Pass, the Craft Guild of Chefs official podcast, hosted as ever by me, Phil Street. Now then, we're just at the back end of the competition season, and we last month had the National Chef of the Year winner, Danny, on the show. So this month, we're having the Young National Chef of the Year winner, which is, I am delighted to welcome back to the show, Ciara Carolyn.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am great. Great. Good to see you again, because I said welcome back to the show because you were obviously with us last year when you finished third in last year's competition.
Yeah.
And of course, you've made those final two steps up the ladder this year. So massive congratulations to you.
Thank you.
How does it feel?
Still in shock. Still can't believe it, but it feels great.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. Well, I mean, it's just a hell of an achievement. I think we could probably all agree with that. But also, you know, like, are you a glutton for punishment? Was there something last year that just, you know, you felt like you had some unfinished business with the competition?
Yeah, definitely. Last year, definitely on the day, didn't go exactly as I wanted it to. So I felt like I really needed to come back and do it again to try and put into practice everything I'd learned and I knew how the competition worked after doing it once. So I felt like I had a better chance. And yeah, I really wanted to come back and give it another go.
Well, it paid off. I suppose that we've spoken about this before. You know, you can't do this without the support of other people, right? So, and we've had Mark on the show before, your head chef, who has a mentoring mentality, it seems. But yeah. I've kind of just got into this time. But just tell us a little bit about where you are now, and you know, and kind of their input in allowing you to get on with this, I suppose.
I'm working at Henrock by Simon Rogan for Chef Mark McCabe, and everyone in Simon's company is always very helpful and very encouraging of anyone who wants to do competitions. They've given me a lot of guidance, been there to try my food throughout the times I was practicing. Paul and Mark both. I mean, this year in our kitchen, we've had four chefs all do competitions, and Mark's a great support to all of us. Very encouraging, and always wanting the team to thrive and do the best they can, not only for the restaurant, but for ourselves individually.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, to have 50% of your workforce doing competitions at any one time must bring an interesting level of pressure, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's very busy. Our kitchen, I mean, we close 2 days a week, but the hotel that we work in is still open, and they hate all of us because we're always there all the time. But yeah, it's a great team to be a part of. We're all pushing very hard, and all we all want to achieve, which is, it's great to be a part of.
Yeah, I suppose it's the only way really to, you know, keep improving is to keep pushing, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. I think you can be pushed by work as much as you want, but at some stage you have to push yourself. And I think to learn that from a young age, Simon's company is very good at doing that. I mean, letting us push ourselves. And I mean, it's great to learn early on in your career how to progress in your own way, not only just through work.
Yeah, 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 totally. So when did you know that I'm going to do this again? Was it literally in the midst of competition last year when you found out that you finished third, or was there another point in the year where you just thought, okay, right, it's time, I'm ready to do this, to try this again?
It's kind of straight away.
Was it?
Yeah, I'm very much, I like completing things. I don't, you know, I felt like coming third, that was great, and I was happy enough. I didn't feel like last year I deserved to win by any stretch. I mean, don't, you know, what is deserving to win, I mean, but this year I really, really wanted it. I pushed really hard, and I cooked food that meant something to me, which is something that I would say I always do, but I also worked around the brief in the kitchen and all of that a lot more, having had the experience of being there before. And then seeing Johnny, who had also came third and then placed first, was also a huge inspiration, kind of to see his progression from third to first, and for me to place third and think, well, if Johnny did it, maybe next year could be my year. I mean, he's a great chef and a very great inspiration to me.
Yeah, well, I think the thing for me is, as well, is that if I recall correctly, you know, last year didn't quite go according to plan. So there must have been a part of you that had felt that you've definitely left something out there. Like you there's another level that you could get to, which might give you a fighting chance.
Yeah, definitely. I used a barbecue last year, and I mean, it's different from lighting a barbecue in the Lake District, where you can just bring it, put it outside, light it, and that's it, kind of done. But in the college, there's a lot more like rules and regulations, and yeah, they weren't too fond of a burning fire in the middle of their kitchen. So
I wonder why that is. Yeah.
Yeah. So that didn't really go to plan. And that was pretty stressful. It kind of threw off my whole day. And then I think on top of that, just the stress of that happening is a lot. Like, to try and also stay focused while being so highly stressed, and just, I mean, any chef will know just the feeling that you get in your stomach when you're going down. But it was like that. But then I had Phil Howard standing beside me, and it was like, oh my God, is this the best day, or is this the worst day of my life?
I mean, of all of the chefs to have there, but I, from what I know of Phil, he's also, you know, he'd be very forgiving in a situation like that. That's just the stuff that happens kind of thing.
Just like me just holding it together, and like, oh, it was crazy. But yeah, I mean, definitely felt like I wanted to do it again, and felt like I could do better. Yeah.
So, and do you think then, obviously taking that experience and kind of knowing, I suppose, the inner workings of the competition a little bit more, which you probably didn't the first time you were in, do you think then that really just sent a new foundation level for you this year in terms of how, you know, how to approach the competition on actual competition day?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I did all my practices, I kind of, instead of leaning into the way our kitchen's designed at Henrock and, you know, availing of all the things that we have, I made sure to make an area that was more similar to the area where we were competing, so that when I went in on the day to the competition, I knew, okay, this goes there, this goes there, this goes there. I had all my setup done so that it would just slot in on the final day to the kitchen there. Whereas the first year I'd set up, you know, kind of with our kitchen at Henrock, and then when I went on finals day, I, like, my setup didn't work because there was nowhere to put these things. Like, they didn't have a place anymore. So I had to, like, rethink all of that in such a short space of time, along with all the other things that I had to do. And I think having that knowledge was the first thing that helped me this year, because it meant that when our time actually started, I mean, I wasn't so stressed.
Mm.
I kind of was able to go into the 2-hour cooking time with, you know, a pretty calm brain and a bit more positively knowing I had everything I need. And yeah. Set for a better 2 hours than the year before.
Yeah. Well, I suppose as well that, like, that sends a wonderful message in itself about, you know, how powerful experience can be, because, you know, you've taken what you learned through your experience, and, you know, you've just set yourself, you've just got a greater understanding of the parameters in which you have to operate and in which to succeed.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and do you think there was also, like, there was a difference in your mindset towards the competition this year because of that, having that experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, first time you do it, you're kind of a bit naive. You don't really know what's happening. You're just kind of thrown in, I guess. But then this year, I knew what the competition was about, how it worked. I knew some of the people involved in it. I think I almost felt more stressed because I did have that knowledge that not everyone had. And I also had come third, and there's only two places you can go up, but there's, like, a lot more places you can fall back. So I think having that pressure as well was a lot. But, I mean, a friend said to me one of the days, before the competition that the only person you're really competing against is yourself.
Mm.
And I think that was probably one of the best things for me going in on the day, because, I mean, if you don't do the best you can't blame anyone else. It's not anyone else's fault if they win and you don't. It's just, you have to just do what you know how to do. If you've practiced enough times and you do it the way you do it in your practices, there's nothing that can really stand in your way. And I think that, for me, really just worry about yourself and not, you know, who's working where or, you know, who's done what. It's a lot sometimes to think about, especially when you're young and you're like, oh God, so-and-so or so-and-so. But yeah, that really helped me just to hone in on what I was doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's cracking advice though, isn't it? Like, you know, at the end of the day, if you could probably get in your own head about the fact, if you're looking over at somebody else's counter and you're looking at their menu and looking at what they're doing all of the time, it's taking away from what you're doing and what you can do and what you can control, because you can't ultimately control their performance, right? You can only really control your own.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, cracking advice. A big, massive tick to that individual who gave you that. And in terms of the feedback that you got from last year's judges, did you get any feedback last year that you felt that you were really going to take on board this year and kind of ensure that you were able to move that part forward?
Yeah, I mean, on my menu, I got positive feedback. Obviously, just some things to tweak and stuff. They commented on my organisation, which I already knew and we've already spoken about. It wasn't great last year. I was just running out of time from the get-go. But, yeah, I think I took that on board this year and, yeah, put it into practice. And it seemed to, definitely worked a lot better, even for me in the time. I was a lot less stressed and a lot more level-headed and focused on what I was doing, having a better setup and a better understanding of everything that was going to happen on the day.
Yeah, absolutely. So taking all of that kind of forward with you and into this year's competition, let's talk about actually the brief this year and how you put your menu together.
So our brief this year, we had mussels and monkfish for the starter, and then we had utilised the monkfish stock and the monkfish trim. And then for the main course, we had chicken roasted on the crown. We had to stuff either the legs or the wings with some kind of a stuffing of your choice. Then had to do two vegetable garnishes, one potato garnish and a sauce using the Bone Master stock. And then the dessert was a fruit-based mousse with a biscuit using any Boyron off a list that they give us. So for the starter, I wanted it to be all about the nasturtium plant, because it's really interesting. Like, you can use all of it and it kind of, you know, it's all kind of in use at the same time as well. So I made one sauce using monkfish stock, and I blended that with the leaves of the nasturtium plant and some other herbs. And then I used the flowers of the nasturtium plant and blended that with my mussel stock and some fermented chili and just like preserved tomato paste and stuff. Then my monkfish, I pan fried, rested it in a brown butter bath and glazed it in a tomato tamari. So my boyfriend Dylan, he does all kinds of things with koji. He made a tomato miso this year using our farm tomatoes, and then the tamari off that he gave to me, and I made a glaze out of it for my fish. And then in the bottom, I had my mussels, which are just steamed in some wine and some stock. And I mixed those with some preserved tomatoes, just confit in oil with loads of herbs. And then I made a nasturtium chimichurri using the leaves, flowers, stems, buds, all parts of the nasturtium plant, some scotch bonnet oil, fennel vinegar, garlic, pickled green tomatoes, blend that all together and dress that over my mussels and tomatoes. So that was my starter.
Crikey. Already sounds like you've got a lot going on.
Yeah. It was a lot of preservation in all of my dishes. So I kind of, the first few weeks after I got through to the final, I just spent preserving all these ingredients, because I knew like a lot of them I might not have in October and I wanted to use them. So I needed to get a lot of them preserved in bulk for all my practices and for the final day. So that was, yeah, took a lot of organisation, but I actually ended up having more than enough of everything that I did make. And then for my main course, I roasted the chicken on the crown, as I'd asked. I stuffed underneath the skin like a breadcrumb herb chicken fat stuffing. I then stuffed the chicken leg. I deboned it and stuffed it with a chicken and foraged mushroom mousse. I did a pompezillion, which is basically like chicken fat rosti, loads of herbs and garlic.
Pompezillion sounds way nicer though, doesn't it?
Yeah, I know. I've made a hash brown, really. And then I was very lucky at the farm. I mean, our farm in Cartmel is amazing. I went there the morning before the competition and I picked all my fresh ingredients. So I had some really beautiful baby kales, loads of different varieties, Cavallonero, peacock, red Russians, white Russians, all these beautiful varieties, just in like a bouquet over the top of my potato garnish. I dressed them in like a barbecued wet garlic pickle dressing. And then I had foraged mushrooms over the top, which I'd foraged in on the grounds at Henrock. We're very lucky. We have a real nice patch of chanterelles, which it's very secret. Nobody knows where it is.
Nice.
And then some little hedgehog mushrooms from just some woods in the lakes. And then a celeriac puree and a chicken and mushroom sauce split with a savoury marjoram thyme infused chicken fat.
Goodness gracious me. Excuse me. We are 10:30 on a Friday morning and I'm ready for lunch now. And you haven't even got to your dessert yet. This all sounds like, I'm not a professional chef, so it's not for me to say this, but this all sounds like you had a lot going on already before you've even spoken about your dessert. So what did you learn from last year then in terms of, you know, ensuring if you have got a lot going on, because you want to maximize every last minute of your time, I suppose. How do you get to a point when you've got all of this going on where you feel like you're connected with it and you know that you can deliver it?
Definitely practicing. I mean, when I wrote my menu, I didn't exactly take on some of the things that I thought I would. Like last year, I thought, oh, maybe I'll make my menu simpler if I do it again, or you know, that kind of thing. And then when I wrote my menu, I realized it was probably harder than the one I did the year before.
Right.
My first few practices, I was like, I don't actually know if I can do this in the time, just with, you know, setting things. And, you know, we had more proteins this year than we had last year. Different factors that came into play. And I think just through practicing and kind of rejigging some things and just very methodical thinking about what I need to do first, what, you know, where do I need to avail of the time? I think, you know, with 2 hours, there's always things you want to do better, or you want to add in an extra skill, or, you know, like just show off all your creativity and make something really amazing. But I think sometimes having something simpler where you showcase really good ingredients, really good skills as best you can in the 2 hour time is what they're looking for you to do.
Mm.
Which is hard when you want to do so much and you want to push yourself to the best you can, but you kind of just have to, you know, it is what it is. You just have to make it work and do the best you can with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a message I hear all of the time, not just within this competition, but in most of the competitions, is that, you know, it must be very difficult as a competitor to not get in your own head around actually, you know, yes, I can do that and that will hit the brief, but actually if I just do that and that as well, then I'm, you know, that showcases everything that I can do and all of that. But actually, you know, finding the balance sounds like that might actually be the thing at the beginning of all of this, which is the most challenging, is to, you know, yes, as you say, do something simple that tastes delicious but also pushes the boundary in a way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think for me, on both the times I've done the competition, my first, like, say, 3 practices were well over the time. I mean, this year when I did my first practice, I was like more than, I think I was like 1.5 hours over the 2 hour time. But then you kind of chip away at it like 10 minutes, 20 minutes and take away things or use a piece of equipment, like utilize it to the best of its ability. Like Thermomixes, they can do so much and you don't even really have to worry about them. Like, instead of, say, for me, for example, the bass from a Moose, I was doing in a pan for like majority of my practices, and then I ended up putting in the Thermomix, putting on the set and the heat, and then that was something I didn't have to worry about. So I think when you think about what you've got, how you can use it to the best of its ability while making your life easier and still making the best food that you can, I think it's a lot to think about. But eventually with practices and failing a lot and, you know, a lot of time, you get there, and then come finals day, you'll have a plan in place of what happens where and how you make it all work in 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, what I love about that is the principle of the first time you run through this and you're an hour and a half over in your first practice, what part of your brain says, oh, that's okay, we can pull an hour and a half back from somewhere?
Yeah, I mean, when you do your practice for the first time, I mean, sometimes the way you do things aren't set in stone, and I mean, your setup isn't the most efficient it could be, and there's so many factors come into play on a first practice that, I mean, it's like riding a bike. You'll fall off the first few times, then eventually you'll know you'll be able to do it. Like, yeah, it's daunting at the start when you are so far over the time. I mean, it was even worse the first year for me. I think I was like almost 2 hours over the first time I did.
Oh, right.
So I think from that, I was like, oh, I've done way better this year.
Yeah. It's given me confidence that I'm only 90 minutes over.
Yeah. But yeah, when your name's in the pot and you know you have to do it, you've got to make it work some way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, which you obviously clearly did, because, you know, here we are having this discussion today. But the bring us home with your menu then. Take us into the dessert and your dish there and kind of the thinking behind that.
So my dessert was all based around strawberries, which isn't obviously in season in October. But I wanted to showcase the methods of preservation you can use on a summer strawberry, which this year we had an amazing year for the strawberry with the nice weather that we got. So I was very lucky to get a lot from the farm in Cartmel that I preserved in various different ways and was able to use in October. And obviously they weren't fresh, they were preserved in different ways, pickled, in syrups, they were, some of them I juiced and frozen the juice, different things like that. But I mean, I think my message on this dish was like, when you have so much of something, like the amount of strawberries we had this year, like the restaurants can't use that amount without doing something else. Like, but like a lot of the things, like we had 5 tons of courgettes, and like we cannot use that. 500 kilos of mooli radishes. I mean, we make kimchis. We do so many preservation jobs because these things, the farm is so full of produce in the summer, but in the winter, it'll only come down to like kales, root vegetables. That's kind of it.
Yeah.
And like when the first frost comes, everything comes out of the ground, and that's it. Like you have to preserve it all. And that's what we learn at our restaurants. So that's what I wanted to showcase in my menu, was that, you know, just because these ingredients are out of season doesn't mean that's the end of using them. Like in the UK, we don't have a lot in the winter. So these are the things that for generations people have been doing, you know, to preserve their ingredients from the bountiful harvests of summer to have food in winter. And that's what, you know, all these Nordic restaurants are making it fancy now, but that's what people had to do to survive. And I think it's great skills to be able to learn.
No doubt. And also, you know, just from a pure business perspective, right, helps with the food cost a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have in our freezer at Henrock, we've got so much like plums, like gastros of plums from this summer and autumn frozen, so we can use them all winter long and even into the spring. I mean, we had so much, like so many blackberries. We were just picking blackberries like all summer and autumn, and I mean, it's great. It's still fresh produce. It might be in a freezer, or you might have to make a jam out of it or a compote of some kind, but I mean, it's still amazing. It's not flowing from the other side of the world for some unknown reason when we have it here.
Yeah. Totally. No, another wonderful message as well. And do you get a chance to kind of tell these stories through the competition in terms of why it is this is specifically what I've focused on with this dish? Do you get that opportunity to have a chat with the judges about that?
On the competition day, you can talk to them and tell them different things. Like I told them some things that meant a lot to me, like different ingredients that I was using, because as a chef, very, I love producers. I like showcasing what producers are doing, because without great produce, we can't really do, you know, you're not going to make great food if you don't have great produce. So, and a lot of work goes into making these things that we are lucky enough to utilise. But you can talk to the judges and tell them different things. And then they have a sheet, which we've written up and has been given to them of the information around our dishes.
Right, yeah. Well, I suppose the last thing you want, actually, is to be taking 20 minutes out to have a gas with the judges while you're a bit under time pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. For anybody who's kind of listening to this, a cracking menu, by the way, obviously, because you won, but it sounds incredible. And also, it sounds to me like you kind of did get that balance right of keeping the core of it simple, but with a little bit of pockets of innovation around it to kind of showcase a different technique, a different way of thinking, perhaps as well. Sounds fabulous.
Thank you.
Yeah, so anybody who's listening to this is contemplating competition at any stage in their career. What advice would you give to them, and just in terms of how to make sure that you can get yourself properly prepped, but in the right frame of mind? Yeah, all of that. Any pointers that you think might help people?
I think first of all, when you write a menu, you're going to have to cook that food an awful lot. Make it something that you care about, that means something to you, that you can talk about with as much passion the first day as you will on the 100th time you've made the food. You know, something that really is something that you care about. And then I think, practicing obviously is number one if you're going to do a competition. But I think if you do fail or have bad practices, especially if it's, three bad practices in a row, it's all still learning. You might have things that come up on the day that aren't ideal, but you have to work around them. So if you do have practice that you say something goes wrong, keep going, work around it. Like, it's all beneficial. On a day, there's six chefs in a kitchen, judges all around. There'll be obstacles, there'll be things that'll go wrong, people using equipment that you might need. Just have to work with it and just don't give up. Keep going, because it is doable. Mm. They wouldn't make it not doable, and everyone wants everyone else to succeed. And the competitors, people that we compete against, it's a great environment. Like, I was given some equipment to chefs to use, and other chefs were helping. We're all friends, and everyone just wants everyone else to have the best chance they can have.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think definitely go for competitions, because they're a chance to do something like write a menu that you can't do when you're a young chef, and it's a great opportunity.
Yeah, no doubt. And that point about, the camaraderie, I think, is something that's incredibly unique to this industry. The amount of competition chefs that I've spoken to over the years who all say the same thing is that, yes, you want to win, but you don't want to win for the sake of somebody else's failure. You want to win because you've won. And by that token, everybody kind of just helps lift everybody else. If somebody's having a disaster, one of the other guys will chip in and help, and all of that. I just think that's wonderful.
Yeah, it is great. It is really, it's a great environment. The chefs this year and Young National Chef, they're so talented. Like, when you read that list where those people work or have worked, or like what they have done, it's amazing to be able to cook alongside them, spend some time with them, share stories. Everybody knows everyone in hospitality, everyone will have a story about someone that you're working with at the minute, or it's a great industry. It's so, although we're spread all across the UK and the world, a lot of people know each other, and it's great. So it's a nice community.
Yeah, no doubt. Was there a moment in the competition where you thought, I'm nailing this year?
I would never say no. No. I'm just not like that as a person. Until I've got something, I would never say, oh, I have this, or I'm not the most confident person in the world, so that's probably why. But I think definitely this year I had a much more level head. I was a lot more calm and focused, and I knew what I was coming into, and I was prepared for it, and that helped me so much. Like, last year I left and I was just in absolute pieces. I was just so incredibly stressed, and this year I left and I was like, oh, that was fun.
Right.
Yeah, I was happy with my food. I think, in a few practices, I'd like because obviously you're Russian and there were some things I might not have tasted before I put them on the plate. But when I did my final plates of food, I had tried every single thing that went on the plates and I knew I was happy with the seasoning, with the taste. I mean, my sauces on my starter, they're very much like, I didn't really have a recipe for them. It was just kind of chuck my things in and then season them up to taste. So I'd taste them like 6 times before I was happy with them and put them on the plate and I knew they're good. I'm happy. Let's go.
Right.
I think like that helped. But then, I mean, you never know what other people are cooking. And I mean, you might think your food's great, but maybe someone else just has a better menu or, but I think, yeah, I mean, I was happy when I left and obviously
it worked.
Went pretty well. So yeah. I was happy enough.
No, indeed. And flip side of that, were there any wobbly moments whereby something started to maybe hint that it might be going south?
I mean, it didn't go perfectly smooth by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, they have the blast freezer that 6 chefs are using. It's not going to hold temperature the best it can. So I just had to leave my mousse in for longer until I could get it out of the mold. And we use deck ovens and we don't have one at work. So I'd been practicing in a rationale. I brought like an oven probe and it was probing differently to the temperature the oven was set at. So I put my chicken in and I was lucky that I set a timer that was less than the time I had intended. But when that timer went off and I checked it, it was a bit darker than I wanted it to be on the skin, but it was fine. Like it wasn't a deal breaker. It was nice and crispy. And you know, what more do you want than crispy chicken skins?
No, for sure. For sure. And well, there's another cracking message, right? Trust the probe.
Yeah, definitely.
But also, I'd like every single competition that I cover / speak to people from, whatever, everybody always has problems with the blast chiller. Like, it's just a thing. I suppose because it's in constant use, people going in and out, different timings, all of that kind of stuff. It's just, I suppose, the temperature issue is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, you just have to make it work. Lucky enough to have the piece of equipment there, so.
Yeah. No, indeed. So you obviously are a winner. It's very difficult to win anything without support of other people. We've already mentioned the support that you get from Simon Rogan's group, specifically Mark. We've spoken around. Are there anybody else that you'd love to shout out to, just in terms of, you know, without them, you know, doing something like this is very, very difficult?
Yeah, my boyfriend Dylan, 100%. He's like my biggest supporter. He did the graduate awards, so we were practicing together for a few weeks, and then after that he was there every single practice I did. He tried all my food until he basically hated all of it. And he was like, oh, don't make me try it again. But I trust him with everything he says, because I mean, he's the one, you know, when you're in a 2-hour time frame, you can't really stop. So I was trusting him with some feedback that he was giving me, and he was there to calm me down when I would get overly stressed. He helped me clean down the kitchen every time I practiced. Yeah, he was brilliant. And hopefully he'll be doing Young National Chef in the near future. And then our executive head chef, Paul, he came down to Henrock to try my food a few times. And his advice is always like gospel to me. He's, yeah, an incredible chef, incredible person, and super inspiring to be around and work with.
Brilliant. Yeah, I mean, it's just great. I don't think you can do anything without the support of other people, right? What's the saying, no man is an island or whatever. But yeah, it's just wonderful to hear from that perspective. So let's talk about winning. You won, in case you hadn't remembered that. And so describe that feeling and kind of what, you know, what goes through your head, and what was the first thing that you did when you found out you won? Because there was a little cheeky video flying around on Instagram that I saw, but yeah, talk us through that.
I mean, I was in shock. I kind of, you know, when it came down to the final place, it is nerve-wracking. You're like, I've either got this or I've not placed at all, and it's like, God, this is horrible. But when they start reading out my menu, and I started thinking, oh, I did that, or I used that plate, or I did that ingredient. And my boyfriend was like, this is your menu, this is your menu. And I was like, it's not. They haven't said my name. It's not me. And then, yeah, just in shock. I think I'm still in shock. I mean, it's, I didn't really know how to put into words what it meant to me. I mean, it's such a great achievement, because you can carry it with you wherever you go.
Mm.
put it on a CV in whatever country you're in or wherever you end up working. It's great to have behind you. And yeah, the first thing I did was ring my parents, and they were exceptionally proud.
Nice.
My mum was jumping for joy. But yeah, I mean, it really did mean a lot, especially going back a second time. And yeah, I think it's just very exciting. I'm very excited for the next year and to see what it has to offer.
Yeah, and so random question, but if you'd have placed second or third this year, do you think you'd have gone, right, sleeves up, I'm going again?
Yeah, probably.
Yes, I'm only going to win. That's the ethos. It might take me a little bit longer to get there, but anyway, it didn't take you 2 years, so there we are. Just talk to us a little bit about the sorts of things that you've actually won. Beyond, as you say, the recognition in itself is a fabulous, fabulous thing. I mean, I would say it's going to be rare for you to have that on your CV, and anywhere where you go, you know, a chef is probably going to entertain a conversation with you about your cooking style, what you want to achieve, all of that kind of stuff, just by the very nature of the fact that you are Young National Chef of the Year winner.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the accolade of being Young National Chef, the people that you meet as well, like the contacts at the awards dinner, oh my God, the room is just full of talented people and people that, if you don't know, you need to go and talk to, like, because those are the people who can give you jobs or, you know, who you'll want to work for at some point, and just who are inspiring and talented and love what they do just as much as the next person. Like, it's amazing. It really is, like, just to be in that environment without even winning. And then we got some incredible prizes, a very long list of amazing prizes, where I'm going to Amsterdam to the Bone Masters factory and staying in a really nice hotel and having dinner at a 2 Michelin star restaurant. Then there's a trip to the Boiron factory in France, a fishing trip to Scotland, dinner at a few restaurants, and a £500 voucher to spend in any restaurant, some farm trips, £3,000 to spend on culinary development, which is huge.
That's brilliant. Really, yeah.
Beneficial. Yeah, among other things. So
I mean, that's incredible. That's a hell of a prize list. In addition to, you know, the winning in itself, as we said.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, if everybody needed any excuse to try and, you know, raise their own bar to the standard, then, you know, get your application in whenever they reopen.
Definitely.
So from your perspective, job done with competitions, or are you just getting started?
Job done for now. Definitely in the future want to do some more, but we've got quite a lot lined up for the next few years, so probably after that definitely think about some more competitions again. So it's always a way to keep pushing yourself and keep meeting people, because I mean, you spend most of your time in a kitchen with the same people every day, and it's nice to expand your social circle and meet new people with new ideas and different ways of thinking. And I mean, it's very enjoyable.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, look, it's been an absolute joy to spend some time with you again. Wonderful to see your journey progress from last year to this, and that you were not taking no for an answer with competitions. And yeah, very excited to see what happens next for you. Yeah, keep pushing the boundaries.
Thank you.
As you are. And yeah, look forward to finding out what happens next.
Thank you. It's great to talk to you.
You too. Well, that was an absolute joy chatting with Kira. Her drive, focus and positivity are seriously inspiring. It's amazing to see someone so young showing that level of maturity and self-awareness, not just in competition, but in how she approaches her craft every single day. What really stood out for me was her honesty about the setbacks, how last year's experience didn't knock her confidence, but fueled her determination to come back stronger. That's the mark of a true competitor. A massive thank you to Kira for sharing her story. We'll of course be back soon with another brilliant conversation, so until then, look after yourselves, and we'll catch you next time.